This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Not too bad right now, 74 degrees. Tommy Tucker, WWL at 614, highs of 87 today, 30% chance for showers. Then we go into a dry stretch all the way from Thursday to Thursday, highs around 90 degrees and nair chance for showers. So the grass should stop growing, thankfully. Stephen Melnick joins us now, professor of supply chain management at Michigan State. He's done research in the strategic supply chain, cybersecurity, performance, measurements and supply chain designs, and electric vehicles as well. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
Good morning, and not bad. How about yourself?
I'm all right, sir. Thanks for taking the time with us, as always. Tell me about the effect of tariffs on products in the United States, specifically EVs or whatever vehicle or whatever specific products tariffs have affected.
Yeah, you've really asked a good question because let me go through and unpack your question.
Okay.
The first thing you're going to ask is, let's talk about tariffs and EVs. On that issue, what's happening is EV sales in the United States, if you look at the recent data argues that EVs are, you know, we are seeing an uptick in the demand for EVs. We're seeing the fact that that about 10% of cars nowadays are EVs. In fact, if you give me a minute, I had one of those situations where I have the data in front of me and suddenly I can't find it.
Yeah, anyway, happens every day for me, Professor. Let me ask you this. EVs, are we talking about all electric or are we talking about partial?
Okay, that's a good question. Let's get down to the statistics.
Okay.
Right now, there's an indication. If we take EVs and we look at EVs to consist of plugged-in electric vehicles, including battery electric vehicles called BEVs, plug-in hybrids, and fuel cell electric vehicles, mm-hmm. we find that since 2010, there have been over 6.7 million such vehicles sold.
Wow.
Right now, in 2024, EV sales reached 1.3 million, accounting for approximately 8.1% of total new vehicle sales. However, what's been happening is we're starting to see that vehicle sales in EVs are slowing. When we look at EVs, the demands are basically, it's diverse. For example, certain areas such as California, Oregon, Washington, the demand is higher. Other areas, the demand is lower. What's of concern of EVs is EVs present an interesting issue. If you look at EVs, if you look at Tesla, for example, in contrast to most other cars that are assembled in the United States, Tesla's kind of an interesting case because over 70% of the parts used in a Tesla are produced and sourced within the United States.
Okay.
So, you know, from a tariff perspective, they're not as sensitive, but they are because they're going to require battery technology, which comes in from China.
Mm-hmm.
But what's happening is, effective October 1st, the $7,500 tax incentive that was given for EV sales, that goes away.
Starting when, Professor?
October 1st.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And what's happening is that people are now buying EVs in advance of that. If you're interested in buying an EV, now is the time to buy it.
Yeah, you got about 2 weeks or 3 weeks. Huh?
You don't have much time. And on top of that, the lease options are also going to fall off quickly after that. So you've got the fact that EV sales are fairly, in the United States, they're fairly strong. They're going to still maintain, we're going to still see EV sales in the United States. Why? Because the world's going to EVs. Europe is going. China's pushing big time. Petroleum-based energy is going away, so it's going to be inevitable. However, you ask the question about what's happening in terms of tariffs. The tariff initiatives are really having a major impact in terms of the auto trade. They're doing a couple of things. First of all, understand that if you look at most cars which are assembled in the United States, right now, for example, a couple of days ago, I was watching something, I forget where, and I saw an ad from BMW talking about how the fact that there's SUVs, the X1, the X3, the X7, are all assembled in the United States. That's true. But did you realize that over 90% of the parts that are used in assembling that EV in South Carolina, they come in from outside of the United States, so they're subject to tariffs. Mm. So what that means is the transmission, the powertrain, the engine, that comes in from Germany. That's going to be tariffed. Mm-hmm. Now, what's happened? A couple of things have happened. In the short term, Trump has been very vocal about the fact he doesn't want to see the tariffs passed on. And the car companies in general have been absorbing the tariffs. And the reason that they've been absorbing the tariffs is because they don't understand what's going to really happen in terms of the long-term prognosis. What do we mean by that?
Professor?
Whenever tariffs are often, they're random.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You wake up in the morning and you're wondering which tariff is going to be on. So if you look at the impact right now, most car companies are absorbing it, and the result has been significant loss. Toyota has reported a $3 billion reduction in operating profits. GM, a $4 to $5 billion reduction in operating profits due to tariffs. Ford, $3 billion. Stellantis, $1.7 billion. So in terms of the short term, we're seeing car companies. But
Professor, let me jump in for 1 second. When you say the company absorbed the tariffs, well, the company is not a person. The company consists of stockholders, right? So he's asking the stockholders to, in essence, pay the tariffs or contribute to the U.S. Treasury in the hopes of attracting more manufacturing to the U.S.? Yes?
That's right, but it gets a bit more sophisticated, which means these short-term actions are going to finish. They're going to end sometime soon because right now, the inventory that the car companies have had in the United States, which have been used to offset or buffer against the tariffs because they were built before the tariffs were imposed, they're running out. So ultimately, what the prognosis is, expect to pay more on your car. And the result of that has been we have seen disrupted supply chains. We are expecting the latest thing I saw from Cox indicates that they're expecting the average price of a new car to go from $42,000 to about $50,000.
Mm.
And on top of it, go on, sorry.
Well, let me just take a break, Professor. We've got to get traffic in. You're going to be with us for an hour. And I also want to talk about the rate on that Hyundai battery plant when we come back because it seems to me that just is the entire thing in one place. It has to do with immigration. It has to do with tariffs. It has to do with American manufacturing. It has to do with who's really working at these plants. And if did these people take, and I know there are union representatives that say these people took jobs that union members should have had, but some people are anti-union because they think they make too much money. Well, if that's the case, then they bring in people that are illegal to take the jobs. You can't have it both ways is what I'm saying. And we'll look at that in microcosm, I guess, when we come back. We're talking to Professor Steve Melnick, Professor of Supply Chain Management, Michigan State University. He's our EV expert. If you got any questions, comments, text them in to 504-260-1870, and I'll pass them along. 621 traffic now, WWL. 627, Professor, we're going to hold off on that battery plan till after the news because I'm going to give you some uninterrupted time on that. Let me ask you this. When it comes to the batteries for these electric vehicles and the materials that come from China, it just seems to me that from our previous conversations, I know that the battery life is how long? 4 years? 5 years?
Yeah, it could be. It's up to 10 years.
10 years. Okay. And after 10 years, then basically if the battery is done, the vehicle is kind of worthless without the battery, right?
That's right. That's one reason why many companies, many buyers are not buying them. They're leasing the cars.
So if that's the case, are we then putting ourselves at the behest of the Chinese 10 years from now for batteries where all of a sudden we have 10% of the vehicles are electric and then China has us over a barrel to say, well, okay, here's the deal. If you want batteries for those cars, or am I making stuff up?
No, you've got a good point. And you've also got something that's affecting innovation. Understand, if you look at where cars are, if you look at where the EV is compared to where, let's say, the ICE or internal combustion engine car is, the internal combustion engine car is in the mature phase of the life cycle. It's the technology is understood. We understand what's going on. It's a really well-understood game. When you're dealing with a car, a product in the introductory stages of its life cycle, when it's just rolled out, a lot of things are uncertain. And this is very much the case when you look at EVs. And where most people, most innovation is focusing is on the battery. And on the battery, you're looking at the composition because you're looking at the type of materials it requires. This morning, I was just looking over something, an announcement that came through where somebody was arguing that they're looking at a new technology for building batteries, which is based on sodium, which is much more widely available. So one of the challenges you have is, if you are dealing with a product in the early stages, a lot of stuff can change very quickly. To give you an idea, in the early 1900s, when cars were taking off in the United States, if one of the most dominant competitors was the Stanley Steamer, which was a steam-driven car. There were also electric cars. So you had, at that point, different technologies competing, and so ultimately, Henry Ford was able to reduce the price and make the ICE car the more attractive option. You've got the same thing taking place in batteries. You know, everyone understands batteries have life. Everyone understands that batteries require resources. They have implications for charging. They have implications for disposal. And there are researchers and companies are, in fact, investing actively to ensure that we can explore alternative technologies. And that's one of the things that presents a problem. Because if you invest or bet on the wrong technology, that investment is useless. So you've got this catch-22 and it's coming into EVs, which is there's a lot of uncertainty. And then you ask the question at the very beginning, what's the impact of tariffs? Well, take the technology in uncertainty, which is a problem of its own. If you talk to GM and Ford, they'll tell you they're not making money on their ICE on their EVs. And then you put on top of that the uncertainty of tariffs. And then you put on top of that what's going on with the ICE, the immigration control enforcement. Then what's happening is you're creating a lot of confusion in the marketplace.
Let me take a break, Professor. We'll pick it up here. We come back and we'll talk about that Hyundai plant as well, because that to me seems like the whole thing in microcosm with people working. That do we have the workers here? If we don't have them, then who do we rely on? If we do have them here, then why didn't we hire them? If we do hire them, then they're going to get union wages. That means we're going to pay more. So if you want American manufacturing, you can have it, but it's going to be at a cost. 6:31, 29 till 7, traffic now, and news all that with Ian Ozan on WWL. 6:45, quarter till 7. Quickly back to Steve Melnick, professor of supply chain management at Michigan State, done research in strategic supply chain, cybersecurity, performance measurement, supply chain designs. We're talking about EVs. Let's talk about the raid on that plant in Georgia. And to me, it's just the whole thing about tariffs and immigration and all wrapped up in one neat little package, because it's the question of if the South Koreans were not there or wherever they were from, if they didn't do the work, could Americans have done the work? If Americans were to do the work, would it drive the price up? And are Americans willing to pay more for that? Professor, the floor is yours. Take me through it.
Okay. Well, first of all, what you're talking about is the raid of the Hyundai plant that took place in Georgia, in a place called Ellabelle, Georgia. What happened was they're building a plant that took the governor of Georgia decades to convince Hyundai to establish an EV plant in Georgia. Now, let me give you what's the background, and I'm going to simply point out a couple of things. Number one, what you've got going on is you've got a cluster, and I'm not going to give you the second part of that word,
all right,
going on in terms of the government policy, because you've got two different agencies which are working at odds with each other. You've got the tariffs, which are trying to encourage companies to come to the United States, and then you've got ICE, Homeland Security, which is trying to clamp down on illegal immigrants or people working illegally. If you're Hyundai and you're going to establish a new plant anywhere, one of the metrics measures that companies use is called time to break even, which is how long will it take me to get to the point where the plant's starting to produce, where the revenue I generate from this new facility equals the costs. Essentially, what you want to do is you want to reduce the time it takes you to get the plant up and running. So if you're Hyundai and you're going to be building a new plant in Georgia, that plant's going to be pretty well based on models of plants that you're using in South Korea. So if you want to bring it up, get it up and running, are you going to use American workers who've never worked with Hyundai, who've never worked with EVs, who've never worked with a battery plant, who don't understand how Hyundai does work? Or are you going to bring people over from South Korea to the United States under a work visa? Basically, they were here. Here's what you're going to bring people over, and what you're going to have them do is essentially work on getting the plant up and running. Now, these people are here, and they're not being paid by Hyundai in the United States. It's part of their duties in South Korea. So what happens is they come over here. Their goal is to get the plant up and running as quickly as possible. That's a good thing, because as soon as you get the plant up and running, we can turn it over to American workers. We can start pumping money into the economy. Everything is good.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
On the other hand, you've got ICE and Homeland Security, which wants to clamp down on illegal immigrants. So you now have them, and they swoop in, and they claim these workers are here illegally. They don't have a work permit. They're not being paid by American companies. They're being paid by their companies back in South Korea.
Let me jump in for one second, Professor. They did not sneak into the country, though. They were brought in by Hyundai.
That's right. They didn't sneak in. They were brought in. You don't bring in 500 people to an area and you sneak them in. It's not like, you know, we hired a couple of 747s and we snuck them under the radar. You know, they're going to come in under regular, you know, they're going to come in here for a certain amount of time.
So I presume this is part of the deal with the governor of Georgia to get Hyundai to locate the plant there?
Yep, because what he did is he got the plant in Georgia, which makes sense since Georgia is close to South Carolina, and a lot of production is taking place in South Carolina. It's taking place in Georgia, so you want that to attract companies. Makes sense. So what happens? Then ICE comes in because of a complaint, and they basically take all the 500 workers and they arrest them. This causes a bit of a foofra. It also does some other things. It sends an interesting message to the international community that's interested in investing in the United States. Because if you're investing in the United States and you want to avoid tariffs, you want to get your production up and running as fast as possible. That means you're going to make the plants look as much as they look in South Korea, in Germany, et cetera, which means you're going to get people over here, bring people over here, which can get that plant installed. It takes time to install a plant. If you've ever seen a greenfield operation, which is you've got brand new processes, brand new workers, et cetera, it's an amazing undertaking. It takes time. So what's happening now is you've created a situation. How can we get plants up and running quickly in the United States to avoid tariffs? And how do we do it without bringing in our own workers? And if we bring in our own workers, will you accept the fact that they're not going to be paid by anyone in the United States? It's part of their job responsibilities, part in their original home countries. So how do you manage that balance? And right now, the concern I would have is if I was the governor of Georgia, is Hyundai and the government of South Korea looking at this and saying, I don't know if we really want to carry on. And how the administration handles this is going to be really important, because it's going to be a signal to other countries thinking about locating facilities in the United States. And this is important because, for example, Honda is thinking about bringing over its CRV production from Canada to the United States. So you've got this issue, which is it's a cluster. And this should have been thought out in advance. It should not have been projected, and then we let the pieces fall out.
Let me move on to manufacturing in the United States. And
yes,
I saw a union representative complaining, saying that those jobs should have been held by Americans. So if that's the case, well, somebody's going to have to pay or make up the difference that Hyundai is now paying American workers union wages instead of their paying them, right? So where's that money coming from?
Okay, it's more than that. Let me take you, because what you're really asking is an interesting question. You're right. Ultimately, you want to convert these jobs and have them done by the American workers. Even if they're assembly jobs, they're good-paying jobs. In fact, the administration, the federal administration, looks at jobs in transportation and manufacturing and drugs, because those tend to be the best-paying jobs. They get you the best benefits. They pay the most per hour. The problem we have in the United States is we have a shortage of skilled workers in manufacturing. Now, in order to show you that, let me take you to another project I just finished with a governmental agency. The United States is trying to bring chip production to the United States. And there's an initiative called the DBX initiative I was involved in. And what we were looking at is starting production in certain areas of the United States. Specifically, we were looking at New York, around Rochester and Ithaca. One of the things we found in talking with the startups who had the capability, the technology, in some cases, some really innovative, leading-edge technology which could shake up the industry in terms of chip production, is their major concern was the lack of skilled workforce. And that's not a trivial issue. Mm-hmm. It's been present for a while. The United States does not have a formal structure to convince, to support people who are changing careers. If I look at some countries in Europe, if you decide to change careers because of the economy, because of economic shifts, they will encourage you to do it by not only giving you, and I know in Michigan, for example, if you go into certain trades, Michigan will pay for your tuition. But in many cases, you're dealing with people who have families, they have mortgages, they have debts, they have car payments. So it's not enough to give someone a free education. You've got to support them during the transition. So what you've got going on is we have a changing manufacturing base, which requires new skills on our workforce. The other problem is that the current workforce we have that is appropriate is aging out. When we looked at the Rochester area, we found out that the average age of the workforce was 51 years old.
Hmm.
Think about that. Yeah. Does that bother you?
Yeah, because that's pretty close to, you know, maybe 10, 15 more years, and that's it. Professor, we're out of time. I hope you come back, because we could talk about this for 8 hours. Steve Melnick, professor of supply chain management at Michigan State. There are no easy solutions to complex problems, and that's what the professor tried to illustrate for us. Thank you for your time. 6:55, 5 till 7. Traffic now, WWL.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.